Hello, thank you for joining me for episode 12 of the Sleep to Healthy podcast titled Non-Traditional Sleep Cures. I'm Dennis Trumpy, and my goal is to help improve your sleep for your better health and well-being. So far on the podcast, we've covered a wide range of sleep advice, such as cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia and sleeping pills. But this represents a small slice of the methods used in different cultures to cure sleeping ills. Humans have a natural suspicion of ideas from other cultures, as they seem strange, and we can't make sense of them within our frames of reference. But if we can bridge that gap, we may benefit immensely. A good example is meditation. When I was growing up, it was foreign and shunned. Now it is mainstream, helps millions, and is widely viewed as beneficial. Today we are going to discuss BRAC, EFT, and EMDR. Haven't heard of them? Well, neither had I until I read Dr. James Alexander's book, Getting the Zeds You Want, Sleep Sense in the 21st Century. Dr. Alexander has a gift for taking ideas from another culture and making sense of them in our Western understanding of things. If you've been frustrated with traditional approaches or want to take your sleep to a new level, this episode is for you. And although we might not be familiar with these techniques, they are backed by the World Health Organization and have peer-reviewed studies, including the gold standard, double-blind studies, to support their effectiveness. Dr. James Alexander is an Australian psychologist, author of two books, and self-professed occasional poor sleeper. He joins us from New South Wales in Australia. James, welcome to this episode of the Sleep to Healthy podcast.
Thank you, Dennis. It's very happy to be here with you today.
Many guests on the podcast have a story of overcoming adversity with their sleep struggles. Please tell us your journey with your sleep issues.
Well, I think the fact that I was nearly killed in a car accident as an 18-year-old is a very relevant factor for me in my own experiences with sleep. My recollection is that my sleep became somewhat difficult after that experience of nearly being killed as an 18-year-old. And the reality is throughout most of my adult life, it's been something of an ongoing challenge. At various times, I feel like I'm able to get on top of the challenge and can sleep really quite well. But there are other times when sleep becomes quite difficult for me, and that may last for a matter of days to weeks at a time. So as a result, I've really had to explore options available to try to improve my quality of sleep. And fortunately, I've managed to find a range of strategies that can be quite effective.
Can you tell us some of those strategies that seem to work best for you?
Well, there's a combination of things. And I guess, you know, anybody that's talking about sleep is very well aware of the multifactorial equation that sleep is, and therefore the multifactorial reality of the solutions to sleep. So it's rarely ever one thing that tends to work. But for me, there's a suite of interventions that I've experimented with personally and I've found to be effective, and I've helped various clients that I've worked with over the years to improve their quality of sleep as well. So these include an approach to emotional issues called emotional freedom technique, which involves tapping on acupuncture points. It might sound a bit odd, but I think we'll discuss that a bit further later. Also, the need to address trauma in a person's life. Not only have I had personal experience of trauma, but I've also had the experience of dealing with the trauma through various psychotherapeutic approaches. There's also ideas that are really quite essential to understand if we want to improve our quality of sleep. The various notions and realities around sleep and how it comes about that we're well served by getting our heads around. And there's also a range of what might be called alternative substance approaches to help with sleep that may involve herbal remedies or homeopathic remedies and various non-pharmaceutical remedies that I've experimented with and I've found some success with as well.
I've often thought that if a brain has sleep cycles at night, that surely it has an equivalent in the daytime, a series of cycles the brain goes through, perhaps on a similar 80 to 120 minute cycle time. You discuss the BRAC or BRAC cycle in your book. Can you tell us something about BRAC?
The BRAC cycle, or BRAC, stands for Basic Rest Activity Cycle. And it's referring to the cycle of activation or deactivation that the brain goes through. I think it probably could be better referred to as being the brain rest activity cycle, because it does refer to the brain, but nevertheless, it's called the BRAC for other reasons. Essentially, what happens is that when our brain is active, we're utilizing sodium and potassium ions for electrical signals to be sent between brain cells. And these sodium and potassium ions can become exhausted. So when that happens, the brain needs to basically take a rest and doesn't necessarily go offline altogether, but it becomes somewhat deactivated. And when it becomes deactivated to a certain extent, that's when we become daydreamy or tired. And during that time, the sodium and potassium ions are being replenished. And this occurs in a cycle that goes between 80 to 120 minutes with an average of around 90 minutes. So all the time, our brain is going through this cycle of resting for a while, replenishing the sodium and potassium ions, and then swinging back up into an activation level where we become really quite alert and active. Our brain is cycling through this all the time, as I said before, in cycles of 80 to 120 minutes.
So how can this understanding of the BRAC be used to help us to get to sleep?
If we're trying to get to sleep during the time when our brain is in the upward swing of reactivation, we've got very little chance of succeeding at that. The last 20 minutes of the cycle where the brain is becoming quite deactivated is the time that's most conducive for falling asleep. We've all had the experience during the daytime, maybe being in a fairly uninteresting meeting at work, where we've struggled enormously to stay awake and it's been really quite a battle. Now, there's a very good chance not only is the meeting that we're attending at that time quite boring, but it may very well be that our brain is cycling back down to this sort of deactivation level. Were we to try to go to sleep at that time, it would be very easy. In fact, it's very difficult to not go to sleep. We need to be aware of the ongoing cycling of the BRAC in order to try to coordinate our timing of going to sleep with where we are in that cycle. As I said before, if we go to bed and we want to go to sleep while our brain is in the reactivation stage of that cycle, we're not likely to succeed. And one of the problems of that lack of success is that it can feed into us feeling really quite anxious about sleep. If we're wanting to increase the chances of easily being able to fall asleep, it's much better to try to coordinate that timing with when our brain is naturally cycling down into that deactivation stage. Then sleep can often happen, or usually can happen really quite easily without any great effort.
Well, that makes sense. And we've been told by others on this program that it is important to wait until you're actually sleepy before you crawl into bed. And I think that gives us a better understanding of why that is and how that's occurring for us while we're awake. One of the recurring themes of guests is the concern that we take sleep too seriously and thus add to the problem by creating added anxiety and perhaps using tactics that are not that healthy. You have an aversion to the term sleep hygiene. Tell us why you dislike this term.
You know, the notion of hygiene or the term hygiene is essentially a borrowed term from the physical health disciplines such as medicine. It's very easy for all sorts of psychological or emotional problems in living to become medicalized. So I'm really quite cautious of the medicalization of ordinary problems in living, the kind of problems in living that we all experience from time to time. One of the reasons why I'm quite concerned about that, when presenting problems become medicalized, they tend to become decontextualized. So all of the problems in living that we have, including sleep problems, occur within a certain context. And that context may involve what's going on in our life now in an emotional, psychological sense, but it may also involve our history of emotional, psychological experiences such as traumas. So I have a real concern with problems in living, like sleep problems, being decontextualized through a kind of medicalization process. And I have a resistance to that. And one of the reasons why I have a resistance to that, what tends to follow on from the medicalization of problems in living, is often a pharmaceutical treatment. My own personal observation is that, not only my own personal observation, but my reading of a lot of the research data, is that pharmaceutical options, when it comes to sleep problems, can often create as many problems as it may solve. So I have a concern with the medicalization of sleep problems, and the notion of hygiene to me sounds really quite medical. And now I realize that sometimes sleep problems do have medical causes and they definitely need to be addressed, you know, through effective medicine. But more often than not, I don't think that sleep problems have a medical cause. So I have a concern of the over-medicalization of many problems in living that I'm confronted with as a psychologist, and I tend to resist that where I can.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think the way that we frame a problem often restricts the types of options that we're likely to take to solve that problem. Now, let's take a deep dive into the world of EFT, or Emotional Freedom Technique. What is EFT?
EFT is essentially a psychological process which utilizes acupuncture points. Now, we don't insert any needles, so it's not acupuncture, but it's often referred to as acupressure because we're actually applying a light form of pressure in the form of a tap or rub or a slight pressure on specific acupuncture points. Now, EFT came about through the work of an American psychologist. I can't remember his first name, but his surname was Callahan. He basically utilized the acupuncture points in conjunction with a form of psychological therapy called exposure therapy. So it's really a blending of what you might see as being Western psychology in the form of exposure therapy with an Eastern health practice such as acupuncture, or in this case, acupressure. And it involves identifying an emotional issue or a behavioral or a health issue that you're wanting to address, and then utilizing this tapping procedure on the acupuncture points whilst you're repeating a phrase about the issue that you're wanting to address, the problematic issue. So as I said before, it's a mixture of Western psychology in terms of exposure therapy and Eastern health practice such as acupuncture.
Okay, and the first step is establishing the target for change, the thought or reaction that we're trying to correct. How is that expressed?
We begin the process by constructing a verbal phrase about the issue that you're wanting to address. And this is where the element of Western psychology via exposure therapy comes into play. So firstly, you need to have a good sense of what the issue is that you're wanting to address. So when we're applying this to sleep issues, which are my experience and my observation of other people, is that this is one of the very effective applications of EFT. When we're applying the sleep issues, firstly, you need to get clear within yourself about the nature of your particular sleep problem. So some people have problems falling asleep. Some people have problems waking up too often and too easily. And some people have problems of, once they've woken up during the night, staying awake for a long time and finding it hard to get back to sleep. Other people have the problem of waking up way too early and then being unable to get back to sleep. So there's a range of different issues that people can have with sleep. So the first step of the EFT process is to get really clear about what's the nature of my particular problem with sleep. And then we construct what's called the setup phrase, which is a verbal statement about the issue that you're wanting to change. Now, the setup phrase follows a standard formula, which we add a statement in that in regards to the particular issue that we're wanting to change. And the standard formula goes like this. It says, even though I dash, 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 fill in the blank with whatever your particular problem is, I deeply and completely accept myself. So if my problem is falling asleep when I go to bed and finding that very difficult, I might make the setup phrase, even though I find it very difficult to fall asleep when I go to bed, I deeply and completely accept myself. Now, when we're making a phrase about an issue which is real for us and that we actually care about, then there are particular parts of the brain that become activated as a result of simply referring to something which is very real to us. So if I'm a person that has a significant problem falling asleep, there's a very good chance I've got a lot of anxiety around that issue and possibly experience a lot of anxiety when it comes to bedtime and I'm in bed and I'm wanting to fall asleep and finding it difficult to do so. It'd be really quite normal for me to experience a lot of anxiety just simply being in that situation. So bedtime, rather than being an experience of a pleasurable release into sleep, can often be a trigger to a fair degree of torment and anxiety. So if this person is experiencing that problem, they'd repeat this setup phrase three times, even though I have problems falling asleep when I go to bed, I deeply and completely accept myself. So that's referring to something very real to the person, and therefore it's activating particular emotional centers in the brain which reflect the feelings that they have around this particular problem. Now, while we're repeating that setup phrase three times, we're tapping on what's called the karate chop point, which is on the side of the hand. If you imagine karate chopping a piece of wood, where you would make contact on the side of your hand with the piece of wood, roughly in that area, is what's called the karate chop point. So the idea is that you tap repeatedly on that karate chop point while you're repeating the setup phrase, even though I have problems going to sleep, I deeply and completely accept myself. So repeat that phrase three times. And in effect, what it's doing in terms of exposure therapy is it's exposing us to the anxiety that we feel around that particular issue. So that's how we start the process.
I found that setup phrase very interesting, especially, again, kind of from a Western perspective. We're used to doing affirmations and making positive statements like, I will sleep well tonight, I will sleep through the night. And here I am making statements saying, I wake up at night, I wake up and worry about things. So I found that very counter to what I'm used to. Do you have any tips on how to make a particularly effective setup phrase?
Well, like as I said before, it's a matter of really honing in on the specific sleep problem that you have and getting very clear about the nature of that problem. As you've correctly identified, these are not positive affirmations. The larger explanation of why EFT might be an effective strategy helps us to make sense of why these are not positive affirmations.
As Westerners, many of us have a resistance to acupuncture and its concept of meridians. EFT uses acupressure, which is similar to acupuncture, but without the needles. Can you explain why we should have confidence that acupressure has an effect on our brain? How does this work?
Okay, well, any kind of stimulation that occurs to the skin needs to be made sense of by the brain. So if we're rubbing, tapping, applying warmth or any kind of pressure or any kind of stimulation on any part of the skin, nerve impulses are being sent to the brain where the sensory cortex needs to make sense of that nerve experience. So let's say if we're tapping on a particular part of our body, the nerve impulses are being sent to the sensory cortex, which is going through a decision-making process in regards to, is this hot? Is this cold? Is this a chemical stimuli? Is it dangerous? To which it's answering no. So the sensory cortex needs to make sense of that. So firstly, anything that we do to the skin, we're also stimulating the brain. The other interesting thing is that there's about an 80% correlation between channels in connective tissue which runs throughout the entire body. There are channels in that connective tissue. While there are no obvious or clear or demonstrated correlates to meridians that Western science can ascertain, so meridians being the notion from Chinese medicine of flow lines of energy that run through the body, there is, however, this 80% correlation between the channels in connective tissue. So that does suggest that there could be some kind of physiological basis to this. It's not a perfect 100% correspondence, but an 80% correspondence or correlation is a fairly high level of correlation. So it does suggest that there could very well be some kind of physical basis to what happens when we provide stimuli onto particular parts of our body. As I said before, we've also got to keep in mind that whatever we do to the skin, we're also doing to the brain. The brain's going to be making sense of that particular nerve stimulation.
Yeah, I found when I tried tapping on some of those points that if I tapped right on the point versus tapped on the surrounding areas, and I don't know whether, anyway, I felt like that there was a definite difference. It was sometimes it almost, in some of the points, it felt almost like a jolt to me versus just a tap on the skin. And the emotional freedom technique, or EFT, claims that by applying the acupressure while expressing the target for change, that this combination somehow changes our brains for the better. So how do you make sense of this?
Well, again, we need to look at, and this goes back to why we're not using affirmations, positive affirmations. We're actually making a statement about the issue that we're wanting to change. And as we're tapping on each of the different points across the body, we're repeating a verbal phrase about the thing that we're wanting to change. And that's called the reminder phrase. So the reminder phrase is simply the part of the setup phrase that we filled in the blank with. So in the example that I gave, the reminder phrase would be something like, may have problem falling asleep. And repeating that over and over as we're tapping on all these different spots. Now, as I said before, when we're making a verbal statement about a reality for us which carries emotional power, then the emotional parts of our brain become activated. Now, whenever we have a problem going on in our life, whether it be a sleep problem or any other kind of problem, there's a very good chance that the limbic system within the brain, the emotional part of the brain, and particularly within the limbic system, a small brain structure called the amygdala has become highly activated. Now, the amygdala does become activated during experiences of fear or anxiety or extreme anger. So very strong negative emotions tend to enliven activity within the amygdala. And there's a very good chance that if you've got a sleep problem happening and you're quite anxious about that problem, which people tend to be, then whenever you think about it, your amygdala becomes quite active within your emotional brain. What we're doing is that when we're doing the repeating the setup phrase, it's almost like we're turning that amygdala on. We need it to be on in order to dissipate the electrochemical energy that's concentrated within the amygdala around that particular neural pathway. So we turn it on and we're keeping that on via the reminder phrases. And while we're repeating the verbal setup phrase or reminder phrase, we're also tapping on all these different acupuncture points. And as I said before, when we're tapping on those points, we're actually generating nerve stimulation to our sensory cortex. So with every different point that we tap on, a sensory cortex of the brain is making sense of that nerve stimulation and going through a decision-making process about how we need to make sense of that nerve stimulation. So there's a particular part of the brain, the sensory cortex, that becomes activated as a result of receiving that nerve stimulation from the tapping. Now, at the same time as we're receiving that nerve stimulation, of course, we're doing the tapping. So we have other parts of the brain, the premotor cortex and the motor cortex, become activated even when we just think about doing a motor activity, such as tapping on our hand or whatever it might be. While we're doing the tapping procedure and we're cycling through a range of different spots, we're generating a lot of brain activity in different parts of the brain to the emotional brain. So keep in mind, we've turned on the emotional brain with the setup phrase and the reminder phrase, and we're repeating the reminder phrase as we're going through the process. Whilst we're generating that chemical electrical activity and energy going on within the limbic area, the emotional brain, we're also stimulating other parts of the brain that don't have anything to do with the emotional brain. They're well outside of the amygdala and away from the emotional brain, the limbic system. So we're talking about areas to do with the sensory cortex and the premotor cortex and the motor cortex. In a sense, what it's doing is that when we're tapping on those spots and we're creating both the nerve sensations as well as the motor activity and the brain activities involved in both of those, we're giving something very different for the brain to do. And it appears that whilst we're doing that, we're creating different neural pathways which allow the intensity of the electrochemical activity whizzing around in the emotional brain to begin to leave the emotional brain and to go out to these different parts of the brain that are also being stimulated. So a fair analogy to use with this is if you can imagine a dirt road, at the lowest point of the dirt road, often when there's very heavy rain, the water will cross the road at the lowest point and it will cut a channel across the road. Now, if we want to fix that, what we don't want to do is just simply get a wheelbarrow load of gravel and go along and fill up the channel, because the next time that it rains, there's a very good chance that the water will again rush across the road at the same point and it will again cut that channel again. So if we want to resolve that problem, what we need to do is to get a shovel or a pick, and we need to go to the side of the road and we need to dig what's called feather drains, which are little channels that are taking the water, diverting the water away from the road, off into the different direction, so that when it rains and the water comes rushing down to the lowest point, the water will then rush along these feather drains away from the road. We can then fill up the channel with gravel and be confident that it will stay that way, because the water is now being diverted away from the road via these feather drains. And that's a crude, if not reasonable, analogy to what's going on with the brain. It's like when we're creating new neural pathways through the motor activity and the nerve stimulation that we're generating from doing the procedure. It's like we're creating new neural pathways, or in my analogy, it's like we're cutting the feather drains, so that when there's a lot of activity going on in the emotional part of the brain around the issue of sleep, or in my example, when it's raining heavily, the electrochemical activity can begin to be diverted away from the emotional part of the brain, particularly the amygdala, out to these other areas in the brain, in the same way that, in my analogy, the water can be diverted away from the low point in the road and without crossing the road. So what we're aiming for there is to begin to decrease the high concentration of electrochemical activity in the emotional brain, particularly in the amygdala, and have that diverted and dispersed away from that area in the brain out to different parts of the brain that don't do fear and anxiety and anger. The rest of the brain does very different, highly complex actions. It's particularly just the emotional brain that does those particular things. So in a way, what we're aiming for is to decrease the high concentration of electrochemical activity whizzing around in a neural pathway relating to problems with sleep. In a sense, we're kind of beginning to starve that neural pathway of electrochemical activity and divert it off to these other parts of the brain. And that's a reasonable guess. It's more than a guess. I guess there's research evidence behind it, but it's a reasonable presentation as to what's going on that can assist with things like anxiety and sleep, and particularly for anxiety that we might feel around sleep issues.
If you're enjoying and benefiting from the Sleep the Healthy podcast, why not share the good news? When I ask, most people I talk to have one or more sleep issues, and they usually like talking about it. Why not give them the gift of feeling and functioning better, especially when it doesn't cost you a dime? Some people still haven't caught on to podcasts yet, so if you want to really do them a favor, offer to take their phone, download a podcast app, and then subscribe them to the Sleep to Healthy podcast to get them started. That's a double favor: better sleeps and entering the wonderful world of podcasts. Who knows? It might even lead to a date. Yeah, I thought that visualization or analogy was very good. I mean, I think it does, as you say crudely, but it does kind of represent what's happening in the brain, where you have, I almost thought of it like a faucet and a hose going to a weed. And every time you have this thought that excites the limbic system, that your emotions just go directly down and feed the weed. And what you're doing is poking holes in the hose with all this tapping and diverting attention from the hose, I guess, and slowly dissipating it. But I really like yours with the feathering and the idea of this channel and the energy being dissipated out in kind of a harmless way. So why should we have confidence in EFT? Like, is there good evidence of its effectiveness?
Yes, there is actually. Since Callahan first created what he called thought field therapy, which was later sort of modified into the EFT procedure, there's been quite a lot of research that's been conducted applying EFT to a range of different situations and presenting problems, from trauma through to anxiety issues, a whole range of emotional issues, as I've referred to, with sleep issues. Also, in regards to physical health, probably the most bit of research has been conducted in using EFT as a means of dealing with trauma. And I remember seeing a video presentation some years ago of a Vietnam veteran who, I think this was filmed probably 35 or 40 years after he left Vietnam, and he described that he'd never had a solid night's sleep since he left Vietnam, and he described the horrible experience that he had in Vietnam, which led to that problem. And he had undergone pretty well every single therapeutic intervention that psychiatry or psychology could throw at him, all to no avail. He was still in a Veterans Affairs hospital 35 or 40 years later and still hadn't had a night's sleep. And in this video presentation, I saw a highly skilled EFT therapist using a particular application of EFT for working with trauma, which the person did with this Vietnam veteran. They filmed him again the next day, and remarkably, he said that he'd had the first good night's sleep he'd had in the last 35 or 40 years since he left Vietnam. So that was really a very powerful demonstration of the effectiveness of this. But I guess that's an anecdotal report. There's a considerable amount of research evidence which has been double-blind controlled research studies. EFT has accumulated a lot of research evidence, as I said before, particularly in regards to addressing anxiety problems and issues, but also with trauma.
So you use the EFT method to help improve people's sleep. Can you kind of walk us through what that would look like?
Sure. Well, as I said before, it begins with a setup phrase, and even though there are a range of different presenting problems that people can have with sleep, we need to really drill down to the particular problems that this person has specifically. The setup phrase could be a very vague statement such as, even though I have a problem sleeping, I deeply and completely accept myself, but it's better to phrase it in very specific terms, really referring to the particular problem that you have. The main way of using it is doing it prior to going to bed or prior to going to sleep. I often do it when I'm sitting up in bed. I might be reading for a little while before I turn the light out and go to sleep. That's when I tend to do the procedure. And I will say something to myself. And I'm sort of drilling down to what are the particular issues that I might have. I don't usually have a problem falling asleep, but when I'm in a patch of bad sleep, I will wake up very often and very easily and find it hard to get back to sleep. So I want my setup phrase to reflect those particular experiences. Now, also, when I'm doing the setup phrase, I'll phrase it in terms of I may have this particular problem. I don't want to actually say that I will have this problem, but I want to make it a possibility rather than a certainty. So I will say to myself, and there's three components to what I might say to myself, reflecting the three components of the issues that I've got with sleep. I might say to myself something like, even though I may wake up too easily and too often, and I may find it hard to get back to sleep, I deeply and completely accept myself. So I repeat that three times while I'm tapping on the karate chop point. Now, the next part of the procedure is going to the beginning of the eyebrow, closest to the middle of your head, and tapping about seven times on that spot while you're repeating what's called the reminder phrase, which for me, well, there's two reminder phrases there. There's may wake up too easily and too often, and also may find it hard to get back to sleep. So I'll just simply tap about seven times on that eyebrow spot, and I'll say to myself, may wake up too easily and too often, and repeat saying that until I've tapped about seven times. Then I go to the side of my eye, just on the rim of the bony socket. Because I've got a second reminder phrase, I'll repeat that while I'm tapping on the side of my eye. And I'm saying, may find it hard to get back to sleep, may find it hard to get back to sleep, etc. And again, until I've tapped about seven times in that spot. Then I go to under the eye, again on the rim of the bony socket, and I go back to my initial reminder phrase, may wake up too easily and too often. Then I go to my chin. Sorry, I omitted from my book by mistake a spot beneath the nose, so tapping directly beneath the nose. Then the next spot is on the chin below the bottom lip. Again, you're still repeating the reminder phrase. Then under the arm, about in line with your nipples. Then an inch below a nipple. Then if you put your two hands together as in a prayer position, and you slowly roll your thumbs together so that the thumbnails touch. If you look at the corner, that outer corner of your thumbnail, that's the next spot. So tapping on that bottom right-hand corner of your, say if you're tapping on your left hand, the bottom right-hand corner of your thumbnail, again, still repeating the reminder phrase, again, tapping about seven times. And then you go to the next spot on the pointer finger, the same part of the nail, again, still repeating the reminder phrase, the same spot on your middle finger, the same spot on your little finger. Then you go back to the karate chop point, again, still repeating the reminder phrase. The next part of the procedure is called the gamut procedure. Now, if you make a fist with your hand and you feel between the knuckles of the small finger and your ring finger, and you go back a little bit from those knuckles, you'll find in the top of your hand there, again, if you're making a fist, there's a small dint, an indentation between the tendons of your little finger and your ring finger. And that's called the gamut point. So the procedure now is to tap, again, tap about seven times on the gamut point, still repeating the reminder phrase. And you're now tapping seven times, and now doing it with your eyes closed seven times, now with your eyes open seven times. Now, keeping your head still, looking down to your right, as hard to your right as you can, still repeating the reminder phrase, tap seven times, and now looking to your left, again, hard down as you can on your left, keeping your head still, tapping seven times, repeating the reminder phrase. Now continue tapping and roll your eyes in a bigger circle as you can in one direction while you're still repeating the reminder phrase. And that's a little bit more tricky than what it sounds. Once you've done that, you again roll your eyes in the opposite direction, still repeating the reminder phrase. Next in the gamut procedure, you think of a tune that you knew before you were around 5 years old, and a tune that has happy associations rather than negative ones. Most kids in our culture know Happy Birthday if you can't think of any other tune. They know that before they're 5 years old, and it tends to have positive associations. But if you've got a favourite nursery tune or something like nursery rhyme, then certainly hum that. And so the next step is to hum this tune for 5 seconds while you're still tapping on the gamut point. After finish humming, then you count from 1 to 7, and then you go back to humming again. Now that's, once you've finished the humming, you've completed one process through the procedure, and you go back to the eyebrow. And you start at the eyebrow again with repeating the reminder phrase, tapping seven times, and you go from the eyebrow to the side of eye, to the under the eye, to under the nose, to the chin, to the collarbone, to your below your arm, to an inch below your nipple, to your thumbnail, your pointer fingernail, your middle fingernail, the little fingernail, and the karate chop point. And once you've done that, you finish the procedure. You then take a deep breath. That sounds complex, but once you get the hang of it, to go through all that I've described just then takes about a minute and a half. So it's not as onerous as it sounds. And you will typically, when you're learning it, you'll typically need to be referring to the written description of the process. But after about 2 or 3 days, you'll know the process quite well and you won't need to be referring to a bit of paper. You're just doing it from memory. So basically, that's the procedure.
Wow. So over the past 3 nights, I've tried out the EFT, and I'd like to share some of my observations and then get your comment on it afterwards. As you mentioned, EFT seems complex with all those different body parts and the gamut procedure, but I actually found it pretty easy to memorize. And the other thing I did is I put the procedure into a Google Doc on my phone, and so that way I could do it anytime or anywhere. And the acupressure points as well, I mentioned that earlier, I found them relatively easy to identify, or at least I'm hoping I got it the right places. Because I did find if I tap around in the area, I could find one spot that did feel, in for a lot of the times, somewhat more sensitive than the surrounding area. And sometimes it almost, as I say, felt like a jolt or a mini shock going through my system when I tapped on it. And I'm not tapping hard either. A key part, and I think you alluded to this earlier, seems to be figuring out that, you know, target for change and trying to figure out, because it seems like the more targeted it is, the more closely it is to triggering that anxiety or that emotion, that probably the procedure is going to be more effective. And I'm still kind of cycling through different phrases, which I'll share in a minute. But that's one part where I thought that getting professional help might be especially benefit, because I think somebody with the proper training would be able to help you to zero in on what that target for change is. So the first night, it was actually similar to the way you expressed it in the book, I think. I still woke up, but I felt very peaceful. It was kind of subtle, but it was definitely a different feeling. And I didn't seem to have the kind of the anxiety. I tend to do problem solving when I wake up in the middle of the night, immediately jump onto something that I feel I need to solve right away. And I just didn't seem to have that tendency. And the second night was similar. And by the way, I was doing this, the EFT procedure, you know, 2 or 3 times during the day. And then I'd do it a couple of times just before bed as well. The third night, I got to do the EFT during the day. So I thought, well, I'll better cram in 3 sessions here right before bed. So I did that. Even though, and actually the other difference I made there is I thought, well, I'm going to kind of cover my bases and hedge my bets, I guess. So I came up with a few different phrases to use. So one was, you know, I wake up during the night. Another one was, I feel compelled to problem solve upon waking up at night. And another one was, upon waking up at night, I have to solve a problem. So I tried kind of different variations. I went through it as well. Now I went to bed and I felt pretty sleepy going to bed, but I could not get to sleep. My mind was just somehow kind of agitated. So I got up and read some more until I felt sleepy again and felt a bit calmer, and then went back to bed. And then I seemed like I could get back to sleep. I was thinking the agitation might have been from, I did have a bit of coffee during the day, so it might have been caffeine. I had a little bit of a emotional discussion with my wife a little while before bed, and that often triggers that type of response. But I thought maybe it had something to do with the cramming of the 3 sessions just before bed, and probably doing them a little more intensely than I normally would do them. Personally, that even if I keep a sleep diary with so many different triggers and things happening during the day, I often find it hard to tell what the cause and effect is of my good and bad sleeps. Then I was able to get back to sleep. And I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but every night that I did it, is I would sleep actually a little less than I would normally sleep, but I actually felt more restored. I felt like today I felt especially well rested, and that kind of surprised me. And I plan on continuing to use the EFT or emotional freedom technique. But I think also, I know that I've done some restrictive sleep therapy before, and that's been very helpful with my waking up. And I thought maybe combining the two together might be a good idea and see what that does. My problem is that I really hate the restrictive sleep regimes. They're very uncomfortable for me. I don't like doing them, and I was kind of resisting it. And To tell you the truth, I think I was just hoping that the EFT would give me an easy out, but I don't think that's going to be the case. So, James, do you have any comments about my experiences?
My experience with using EFT with sleep is I tend to, probably every few months, for some reason, sometimes I can understand why, sometimes it's hard to understand, so I will go through a patch of not being able to sleep very well. As those days begin to become more and more, or those nights, I start to become more anxious about the whole prospect of going to sleep. I can feel within myself the anxiety beginning to build around the whole sleep issue. Now, because these episodes might be 3 or 6 months apart, I've generally fallen out of the habit of doing EFT regularly for sleep by the time the next episode has come about for me. And it's often after about 4 or 5 or 6 nights of sleeping poorly and getting more anxious about the proposition of sleep that I kind of remember, oh, yes, I'll do EFT. So then I start doing that, and it might be a week down the track or something like that, and I notice that it rarely is a one-off, you know, success experience. So I'll, as you've reported, I'll do it the first night. I tend to notice that I may very well still wake up, but I tend to wake up less alert and find it easy to get back to sleep. I'll do it again the following night. I'll find that even more so the case that I may very well still wake up, but I'll be even less alert again and more easily able to get back to sleep. And then usually after about the third or the fourth or fifth night, I find that I'm kind of back to a non-problematic sleep pattern again. So I don't find it to be an immediate success process. It seems to me that I've got to work at it over successive nights in order for the success with it to accumulate. Now, I suspect that that has something to do with me getting increasingly anxious about sleep. And I think the anxiety around sleep, at least for me, is probably the main issue that actually interferes with my ability to catch a wave of sleepiness or to be captured by that wave. So it requires sort of repeated attempts on my behalf in order to have a positive impact on the sleep anxiety and therefore have a positive impact on my sleep. So I'd suggest continue experimenting with it. I also, a lot of these things in combination. So there's, in my book, I talk about a range of different strategies that people can utilize. And my suggestion is that people try all of them and try them in combination with each other until you can really find what combination works for you. So I prefer not to rely on any one thing. So I don't rely just on EFT in order to be able to sleep. I've also got some very relaxing music with sound effects from nature that at times I will listen to, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning if I've woken up and I'm unable to get back to sleep. So I find that can be really helpful. I combine that with EFT before I go to bed as well as when I wake up during the night. At times I've experimented with different herbal products or melatonin in order to try to create a physical impact on my capacity to sleep as well. So I tend to, and I'm also retaining awareness of the BRAC, of those waves of sleepiness, and trying to coordinate my timing of going to sleep with when that natural wave of sleepiness is coming my way. So I try to utilize a whole range of different things. And I actually think there's a synergistic effect of combining a range of different strategies and approaches. So I don't present EFT as being the only thing that anybody should do in order to get good sleep. But I do think it's one helpful contributor to getting better sleep.
Are you driving, running, painting, or otherwise active while listening to this podcast? Do you wish you could remember details or facts of what was said or what the link was to that interesting resource? Go to sleeptohealthy.com to get detailed show notes, links to resources mentioned in the episode, and more. See you there. That's good information to know. And you have issues, as you mentioned, with sleep maintenance, which is the problem of waking up during the night and having difficulty getting back to sleep. You have a method to adopting the EFT that you call real-time EFT. How does that work?
Okay, well, you'll notice that when I was talking about doing EFT before you go to sleep, that's in anticipation. So while we're sitting up in bed reading or doing EFT, we're obviously not in that moment struggling to sleep. That's in anticipation of potentially having sleep problems, and that's why with that particular setup phrase I stated, even though I may have problems waking up too easily, etc. If you're actually in the experience, it's 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're in the experience of waking up, of having woken up, your mind racing and finding it very difficult to get back to sleep, then you're no longer in anticipation, but you're in real time actually experiencing that problem. What I found at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning is to do any kind of physical action, for me, I found was more likely to wake me up or keep me awake. So if I was to lie in bed and do the EFT procedure physically, not only would it disturb my wife, but it would also disturb me and possibly contribute to keeping me awake. So what I then hit upon was the idea of doing EFT in my imagination. It seems to me that when my particular problem is when I wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, my mind can be going 1,000 miles an hour. And as you said, your mind is problem solving. My mind can just be looking for one issue after another. And it doesn't seem to matter so much what problematic issue it's focusing on. It's just there's an excessive amount of electrochemical energy buzzing around in my brain, and it's not going to allow me, it's not at all conducive to sleep, and it won't allow me to sleep. What I discovered was doing the EFT procedure in my imagination, as opposed to doing it physically, seemed to be really quite effective, and I've got ideas as to why that's effective. Now, it's a mental activity. Once you get used to doing the procedure, as you said, after a day or two, you don't need it. You don't need to be reading it. You just know how to do the procedure. So you can easily do it just running from your memory. It's a procedure in which one step follows the other. So it's a procedure which you actually need to think about. But although you need to think about it, it's not inherently interesting. There's nothing extremely interesting about imagining tapping on your eyebrow, then imagining tapping on the side of your eye, under your eye, etc. But it is a procedure that you have to think about. So it requires mental exertion to a certain extent in order to go through the procedure. And keep in mind that you're also repeating the setup phrase and the reminder phrases in your imagination. It's a procedure that requires mental effort simply because it's a step-by-step procedure, but it's not an inherently interesting procedure. It's not fascinating, therefore it's not going to be arousing. And what I've found is that if I've got an excessive amount of electrochemical energy buzzing around in my brain, keeping me awake, looking for one problem after another, if I utilize that excessive amount of electrochemical activity by focusing on the imaginary EFT procedure, then it seems to absorb that excessive amount of electrochemical activity and focuses it in on this particular procedure, which, as I've said, is not inherently interesting. So I'll imagine seeing myself tapping my palm, I'm tapping the side of my hand, the karate chop point, saying to myself, even though my mind is racing and I'm finding it hard to get back to sleep, I deeply and completely accept myself. And imagine tapping 7 times. Then I imagine tapping on my eyebrow, mind is racing, mind is racing, mind is racing, imagining tapping 7 times. Then imagine tapping next to my eye, finding it hard to get back to sleep, finding it hard to get back to sleep, etc., and then going to below my eye, alternating between those two different reminder phrases. When I don't tend to do the gamut procedure, which is where you do the eye rolling, etc., because I can't imagine rolling my eyes without actually doing it. So I simply do the procedure from the start of the setup phrase, tapping on my karate chop point through the eyebrow, etc., all the way down to my fingernails, then to the side of my hand again. And then I simply go back to the beginning, back to my eyebrow, and I keep on recycling through that. And what I've found typically is where I might stay awake for 1 or 2 hours, I find that when I'm doing this in my imagination, I'm more likely to be awake for something like 5 to 10 minutes, which is a vast improvement on 2 or 3 hours. And I notice that when my mind starts to say, and I'm, again, in my imagination, I'm repeating these reminder phrases and alternating between these reminder phrases all the time. And when I notice that my mind starts to say just sheer nonsense, things that just sound like gibberish, like finding it hard to get back to sleep, finding it hard to get back to sleep, if my mind instead says pink marshmallow mountains or some other nonsensical thing, I know that I'm really just seconds away from falling asleep. It's almost like my mind has started to give up. If I just push through and I just persevere a little bit longer, then really within 5 or 10 seconds, I'm going to be asleep. So that's what I find works. Again, I don't rely on EFT as the only thing that I do if I wake up during the night. If I'm in a bad pattern, I'll also listen to the nice relaxing music that I've got with nature sounds in it, whilst I'm also doing the EFT procedure in my imagination.
Yeah, I think it's helpful to have a lot of tools in your toolbox for sure. Now, you had a lot of other stuff in a lot of other interesting information and material in your book, but we are starting to run out of time. So as we near the end, I have a fun but serious challenge for you. In my fantasy world, I am a YouTube wizard who is giving you unlimited resources to produce a 30-second video with a guaranteed minimum of 10 million views. Tell us what you would put in that video and why.
Well, look, great question. My answer is not that much fun, I'm afraid, but it's more of a serious answer. I guess the thing that concerns me greatly, as I mentioned earlier, in regards to the notion of sleep hygiene and the medicalization of all problems in living, I have a very large concern that our culture is going more and more in the direction of medicalizing every single problem in living. And the problem with that I see is that the more that we do that, the more we decontextualize people's problems. So whether that problem be anxiety or trauma or depression or panic or gambling or whatever it might be, I have a real concern that if, to the extent that we're medicalizing these problems and we're calling them disorders and we're treating them as though they're somehow akin to physical disorders, we're taking people's experience outside of the context in which these experiences began. And as a result, our culture is becoming more and more sold on pharmaceutical fixes to problems in living. And I just have a massive concern that that's taking us very much in the wrong direction. And I think there are very real consequences to medicalizing every aspect of our lived experience, looking for medical fixes to all sorts of different problems in living. I guess that's what I would like to use my YouTube 30 seconds on.
Well, I think that'd be a great message to be able to get to 10 million people. And as we wrap up, what is one thing our listeners could do today to improve their sleep tonight so they can feel and function better tomorrow?
Well, look, I recognize this will sound very easy for me to say, but keep in mind that I'm a person that's also struggled with sleep. But I think one of the key messages is try not to worry too much about sleep. As I said, I know that's a very easy thing to say. But based on a couple of bits of research, one bit of research found that the more that we focus on the lack of sleep, the more we suffer from the consequences of lack of sleep. If we tend not to focus so much on the lack of sleep, we will probably not suffer so much the consequences of the lack of sleep. So that's one important finding. Another important finding is whether we believe we get enough sleep or not is more important in how we mentally function the next day compared to the amount of sleep which we actually got. So again, if we get carried away in catastrophizing about not getting enough sleep, really feeling very hard done by that we didn't get enough sleep, well, that's actually more important than how much sleep we actually did or didn't get in terms of how we function the next day. Clearly, we have a lot of anxiety around sleep, and I think anything that we can do to try to alleviate that anxiety, whether it be simply not focusing so much on the lack of sleep that we've got, attempting any strategies to try to deal with the anxiety that we have around sleep, I think that's a great place to start.
Yeah, I think that's a very good message. So where should people go to learn about you and the resources that you have available?
My website would be a good place to start. And that's www.drjamesalexander.com/psychologist.com. That's where you can find a link to my book, Getting the Zeds You Want. Or people, if they just simply want to purchase that book, you could also find that on Amazon.com. But I found that you need to put in the full title, which includes the subtitle, Sleep Sense in the 21st Century. And you even need to put in a hyphen after the Z, between the Z and the S, in order to actually find the book. But anyway, there's a link to that from my website.
Yeah, I actually found that too. I don't know why, but it is a little bit tricky to find. And that is one of the reasons why we will have the link to that in our show notes, as well as the link to your website as well. James, when I began reading your book, you know, I was expecting like yet another book on sleep hygiene and some practical advice on sleeping better. But instead, you've opened my life to a new world of understanding of how our bodies and brains work and practical steps to take advantage of this. You know, there's so much more in the book that we didn't have time to cover today. Thank you for keeping an open mind in the world of psychology and sleep and tapping into some of the wisdom of the world has to offer. On behalf of our listeners, thank you for your presentation today and for giving hope to those who have been frustrated with more traditional approaches in getting their Zeds or Zs that they need.
Thank you very much, Dennis. It's been a real privilege to talk to you today.
And now a summary of the key points Dr. Alexander made today. The first is how we medicalize life's issues in society today. If our sleep is broken, then fix it with a pill. This is a temporary solution with side effects. But as we learn over and over again on the podcast, a single symptom, such as insomnia, can have many causes, some medical, many not medical. If we can see our sleep issues in relationship to our whole selves, then we have a good chance of finding the underlying causes and improving our sleep and our lives. The second is that there are reliable, proven techniques that are outside our awareness to help with sleep. Emotional Freedom Training, or EFT, is one of these. Dr. Alexander explains the other methods in his book. The third, buried in the conversation, is that many issues are caused by a trauma which we experienced at some point in our lives. If part of the underlying issue is trauma, then no fix will really work until the trauma is dealt with. Dr. Alexander thinks that trauma is often an underlying and hidden issue for many of us. As usual, you can find detailed show notes about the interview with Dr. James Alexander, along with all the links at sleeptohealthy.com. This concludes our episode for today. If you found this episode helpful, you might also want to listen to episode 9 with Michael Schwartz, where he covers intensive sleep retraining, which is another non-traditional but effective solution for getting to sleep quickly. Thank you for being with me today. I encourage you to let your friends know about the podcast, and I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of Sleep to Healthy. This podcast is not a substitute for advice from a qualified healthcare professional. The sole purpose of this podcast is to educate and entertain. As we do not know your particulars, we cannot and do not provide professional or medical advice or services. We strongly encourage you to consult a healthcare professional before incorporating any ideas in this podcast. Listeners who use the information in this podcast do so at their own risk. The guests on this podcast express their own opinions, beliefs, and conclusions, which is neither supported nor opposed by the podcast and host. The podcast does not fact check information provided.